made this video.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 90 of Value Town. I'm your host, Chan Man B, and joined today by Noxious, of course, my co-host. What's up, buddy?
Not much, man. Just regular life, playing the Hearthstone stuff a little bit. I mean, with the new patch that came out, I actually played more than I had the previous weeks. You know, I did mention in the previous episodes that I barely played. This time around, I gave it a bit of a more honest shot. So,
all right, cool. Yeah. And then I want to welcome to the show, asking who made that intro video. Obviously, not you.
And
that's not a static image, guys. That's actually a real live shot. But I want to welcome to the show, Disguised Toast. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, how's it going, man? Thanks for having me. Happy to be on.
Who's your handler? Yeah, who's that?
Yeah. It's been, 4 months?
Probably something like that. Yeah, I think you were on the show in the spring.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely been some time, but I've been doing some awesome videos, of course, in the meantime.
Of course, that's what I do.
That's right. What was actually the last one you did?
The last video I did was the Tusker Totemic stats one.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yes, that was really good.
Putting my math degree to good use instead of shit posting.
I like that math degree. The guy's like, let's use high school math. All these
high school. Yeah, he's got definitely much more advanced.
He's got an advanced understanding, but like in the end, when he applies it to Hearthstone, it's like, I guess we just use percentages.
Just add it up and divide it by a number, please.
Like, how much better is this? Well, I guess additions.
Well, guys, we got a lot to talk about. You can see the topics down below here. Amazon Prime in Toronto. Lots of big things announced at TwitchCon. And HCT Asia Pack that concluded with some interesting and familiar results. And then we have our typical segment with our week in Hearthstone. That includes decks that we played with and anything that we're doing with Hearthstone, any fun moments or whatnot. And we're doing Mechadorps Workshop. It's been a few weeks since we've had it, and it's been too long. So we definitely have a few cards that me and Nox just wanted to bring up. And of course, viewer Q&A at the end. Go ahead and tweet those questions to me at ChamMV, and we'll read out as many as we can. But okay, let's start off with some news that was announced at TwitchCon. Some huge news. Amazon Prime. Now, if you are a member of Amazon Prime, you now receive all kinds of awesome goodies. And that includes free subscription to any of your favorite Twitch streamers, which, holy crap, right? That was, while I was there, it was just like, crazy, all the streamers that we know in Hearthstone or whatnot, and they're just like, oh my god, I just got X numbers of subs, and they're not even streaming. So adding all those subscriptions to the ecosystem, I think that's amazing. And then we were all wondering about, you know, the Tyrande skin, and this is what the Tyrande skin was all about. You get the Tyrande skin free with this package or this offering. Yeah, as well as a lot of other things too. But want to get your thoughts on this overall, just from the standpoint of melding Amazon Prime and Twitch Prime type of thing.
Oh, Blizzard with Hearthstone actually can afford to extend the platforms through which they run promotions. You know, they do cross promotion on World of Warcraft with Overwatch, with Heroes of Storm, with Hearthstone, they do that. But because it's a PC game, they can afford to do that. They have like this restricted audience when it comes to what they're trying to reach with WoW. But when it comes to Hearthstone, it's a huge other platform. And a lot of the consumption of content for Hearthstone is driven through mobile. And as a result of that, like, it's usually a little bit easier, if not necessary, to promote through other channels. And I think Twitch and Amazon, you know, Amazon having bought Twitch, it just kind of makes sense that if Amazon wants to invest into esports through Twitch, also tries to capitalize on one of the biggest titles they have access to, which is Hearthstone, which is also, you know, pretty casual, family-friendly image, as opposed to maybe going deep on CSGO. Mm-hmm. So I really like what they've done. I just don't know if it's nice that they kind of restricted it region-wise. Like, that's the one thing. The region locked in North America really sucked.
Yeah.
Cadgar level bullshit.
Cadgar level bullshit.
I just don't like it.
Oh, man.
I just don't like that.
Feels bad. I know, like, all these folks, like, in Australia, and so they're all QQing right now because they can't get it, right? So, Toast, what do you think, man?
I mean, the big question is, did the guys over at Blizzard prepare something for Tyrande, for people outside the region? Because, like, obviously they know this is coming, that people are going to complain about this. At the same time, I don't think they can really reveal that plan while the partnership with Twitch is going on. It's like, hey, we partnered with Twitch Prime, but you don't have to get it now because we're going to make it available later on. Like, I think even if they did have a plan, they can't say they have it right away. But I do think they will make it available to everyone eventually.
I hope they make all the skins available to everybody eventually.
Yeah,
but they haven't to date. So what makes you think it's going to be, they're going to do it different?
Yeah.
I mean, with Khadgar, I think the restriction on Khadgar was less because Khadgar was just iOS, right?
I think it's even dumber personally.
Yeah. With Twitch Prime, it's like you have to be living in these countries. If you're not in this country, then, you know, too bad. But with Khadgar, at least, okay, you don't have iOS. You can still kind of maybe get your hands on an iOS device, but it's unrealistic to expect you to go to another country. Like, yeah, you can kind of...
You can get around it, right?
Get around it.
You can definitely get around it.
But
it takes somebody knowing what they're doing, though, to get around it.
Like, they should make it available to everyone through, like, a legitimate method, right? Not playing around with address.
Here's my question, right? Here's my big question. When you log on the client and you live in South America, let's say, or even like Asia, do you have the message that says, hey, Taronga's up? Like, do you get that? That might actually tilt me. If I live in the country I can get that and I'm located there and the client sees that I'm there, then, you know, it lets me know that I can get this hero. But if I'm not, does it still pop up? Like, that's the big question I've got. Because
that's true.
Maybe, like, if that is the case, then, yeah, there's a reason for people to start bitching in droves about the promotion even occurring. I don't know.
Hi, I'm here, but you can't get me.
I'm this hot blue skin chick in the Warcraft universe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm confident. I put my faith in Blizzard on this one. I do think they'll actually make a way for everyone.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, hopefully. So, okay, how about the whole free sub thing? What do you guys think about that?
Well, more money for everyone, man.
Right?
And then none at all the following month.
Well, so the cool thing is, hopefully Twitch will add, you know, one of the things I feel like would have been nice, or it would be a nice feature from Twitch, is to send out notification emails when subscriptions do expire. I think just generally speaking, I think it would be good.
I think they do that, don't they?
I don't think so. And
maybe it's just you log on and you're not subbed anymore.
Yeah, I think you do get some kind of notification in that regard, but an email would be nice too. And I think it would help all of the broadcasters if that happened, especially the ones that are getting the free sub from this Amazon Prime thing. And
or it might not. It might do the opposite, where people who forget they have it on just go and
that's
say,
"That's true too." That is true too.
I mean, they're like, "Oh, I have all these subs that will auto renew."
That's true. But, you know, I don't know. I wonder what the statistic is on people that have auto renew versus, you know, opt-in type of thing. You think so?
Yeah.
I mean, subscription's always been a model where, you know, people benefit a lot from folks just forgetting. Like magazines, right? That was always the typical. So I wonder how much of that really plays into Twitch.
Like, I feel kind of bad when I see someone who, you know, resubs and he hasn't been in the channel in like
ever. Yeah.
Forever. I'm just seeing that name, like, giving me money every month. And I do feel bad. It's like, he's not getting any benefit out of this. He probably just forgot about the $5.
Lurking. He's totally lurking.
He's not lurking. He's gone.
Well, the upside is, like, I think if they're not on, it won't tell you they resubbed. From what I've noticed, like, if they don't show up, it'll just tell you, like, next time you log in, X viewers have resubscribed.
Right.
I don't think, like, AFK people show up in the chat if they're resubbing as you're live.
No. But do I still get their money?
You still do. You
can buy
stuff. Okay,
of course you still get their money. Of course. But no, this is actually amazing for all the broadcasters. I mean, they literally added, I don't know, a million possible subs to the Twitch ecosystem. That's crazy.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it was a bonus for everyone. Like, if you had Twitch Prime, I mean, Amazon Prime, you know, and it doesn't take away money from streamers because streamers still get their regular share, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Essentially, Twitch is just paying a bit more to us, which, I mean, it's a win-win situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. The best synergy they've had, at least, or this kind of cross promo I've seen to date, at least with Amazon, especially with Amazon buying Twitch. It's about time. We've been starting to see that Amazon coin thing in this kind of third-party sponsorships of people who broadcast on Twitch. Yeah. But now we're actually seeing something that's directly directly integrated into Twitch, which is cool. It's about time.
Amazon coins.
Amazon coins, yeah, exactly.
You're taking over the world.
You're such a sellout. You're such a sellout.
Get Amazon coins.
No, that's far, man. I think it's going to get...
This guy puts it in the beginning of his videos now, too, man.
Yeah. Firebat's just like... Fair. Right now, Firebat's just loading up on Amazon monies, and then he'll just flip it for a real house in, like, Santa Ana or some shit. Like, I don't know. it'll be worth it at some point. Point is, like, there's a lot of more money coming in from big... I guess, like, I don't want to say corporations, because that's not necessarily the word I'm looking for, because there's more than just the huge ones. What I like about, you know, Amazon investing in that scene is that suddenly all the large, you know, financial, you know, companies that can actually have financial backing for those events will be interested, because they see that Amazon's investigating the space. And then the next logical thing is, well, what's that worth to me, right? Like, can I actually put some of my own funds into it, even beyond just mobile games?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. All right. Well, one thing that's come from this whole Tyrande skin, and everybody's just talking about Priest, is Blizzard recently announced that they're doing an event, or maybe they helped organize this kind of community event called the Priest Extravaganza.
Yeah.
And what it is it's basically a lineup of a bunch of, I don't know, kind of show matches or arena co-ops. Here, let me show you the page here, guys. You can kind of see that there's basically something for each week of October, and this week being the first one, actually it might be happening right now or today, it's Hafu and Chess Dude doing, I believe, a co-op arena, and then we're going to have a Trump versus VLPS show match around this. Actually, it starts a little bit later. It starts in about an hour. And it kind of continues on. You see, got Crip, Tice, Amaz, Amnesiac, Geek and Sundry, Dog and Savitz are involved with this.
That's cool.
So it's, you know, kind of a way, I guess, to celebrate the whole, you know, just Tyrande skin coming out and Priest.
Yeah, I love the first comment, by the way, just under this post. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll see the first comment that somebody posted. It says, "Sorry, Twitch Prime isn't available in your country." And it's literally just a huge middle finger to Blizzard. But the point is, they're trying to promote way beyond anything they've done for other skins, right, this time around. Like, they've actually gone out of their way to make a day.
Yeah.
A lot of time for the event.
Yeah, definitely. And you can tell that if you look at all the streams, it's basically the top streams in Hearthstone that they targeted here, because all the channels are...
I mean, Trump, Crip, and Amaz are top streams. Savitz and Dog are up there too. So the people people don't really know is Chess Dude and VLPS, right? And then Amnesiac
a little bit.
Amnesiac, like, maybe.
Not aware. Not everybody knows Amnesiac. All the competitive scene does, but...
Yeah, and Geek and Sundry is it's more of a mainstream geek culture channel with...
Sure,
but it's Leech. Big. Geek and Sundry is huge, though. Yeah.
So, I mean, people are talking, right? About Zeta a lot.
He's
known as a Priest player. And Noxious, you can weigh in, because you're also known as a Priest player, right?
More or less, but I think Zetalot definitely should have been the first guy on this list of literally probably any other person. Like, Amaz still keeps his reputation of being a Priest player because of the old days, like how he built his reputation on it. I just don't get how Zetalot was glossed over.
I don't either.
Maybe he was asked and nobody really...
He wasn't asked. I can tell you that. He wasn't asked. So...
So weird.
Yeah, like,
it's a very touchy subject, like how Blizzard does these invites, right?
Artosis is the world champion of what?
No, it's clear that they were going for more of a larger scope audience. But like you said, it's like Zetalot is just something. Even if you don't like love him, you know, or don't think he's like that I don't know, entertaining of a personality or whatnot, he's still got popular. His stream's pretty popular. It gets like 1 to 2,000, you know, concurrence whenever he's streaming. And he, no doubt, like no question, is the Priest streamer. And as a community, if this is like a community event, you know, at least if it's advertised as a community event, then he should be part of it in some way. Like,
You celebrate him, right?
Yeah. Celebrate him. Maybe Blizzard will fit him in after seeing the reaction from people, because there's no reason not to have him, right? You have a wide variety of invites on there, which is fine. Like some less known people and some really popular people. And Zetalot is kind of in between those two. But, you know, like you said, he's the pre-streamer. So I'm expecting Blizzard to fit him in somewhere after seeing the response to this.
I mean, all you have to do is add. It's not like this is like Blizzard's stream or anything. This isn't play Hearthstone or anything. This is just a list of people's streams and times that they're doing stuff. So, yeah, Zetalot, they could just have him do something and just put him on the schedule. And I think that would... Because it's not, you know, that is what it is, right? I mean, it's not much more than that in terms of it's just kind of a collection of or again, maybe some matches and stuff that they've organized, but it's on these individual streams. Right. Hopefully they'll do it. Hopefully you're right, the toast, that they'll just add them to the schedule and we could do something cool with that.
Yeah, maybe they'll delete Purify from the game as compensation.
Oh my god. Yeah. It's kind of an obvious thing, though. So again, it's sometimes with the community, I wonder. All right, why don't we move on to HCT Asia Pacific, the championship, right? This is the last region to complete their summer championship. And well, we've gotten a 3-time championship winner now in that region, which is Handsome Guy. Pretty amazing results, no matter if he had to go through prelims or not. And people,
what do you mean, no matter?
It's still not easy.
Still very impressive. It's like, no question.
It's still very, very impressive that he wins.
Yeah, considering like how many people you have to beat, even if you did skip a couple of stages, it's still like you still have to beat like some of the best players in the world 3 times in a row, like 3 tournaments in a row,
right?
But obviously, that's a big discussion that people are having, right? Like, it kind of sucks because it is taking away from his achievement a little bit. Mm-hmm. But that is the rules of that region. And some people don't like comparing Asian region to Europe or North American region because of it, because the rules just are a little bit different. And yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts?
I'll start off and I'll just say that I actually think the Asian region is doing something that's good. Like just having him come to the next, you know, just kind of forgo the preliminaries. That's the kind of thing that we actually do need in this structure. So having Handsome Guy actually win 3 times is something for us to talk about, you know, and it is an improvement.
Like, I remember the one like earlier this year, what was the third one? The majors.
It's just each of the majors.
HCT like finished the first and then second, but I don't know about the other 3rd time. I must be like forgetting one event. Event.
Yeah. So I mean,
anyway, it doesn't matter.
With him winning, you know, again, him having him reoccurring in these events, I think is just one thing. But on top of that, him winning is, you know, that's something that's at least an achievement that we can, you know, laud and whatnot. Versus having different people every single time, like we've basically had in the at least the Americas championships. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, whether it was just like super impressive or not, I guess that is a subjective thing, and obviously people in the community have different opinions on that. But you know, totally disregarding his achievement, I think is a little bit overboard. But at the same time, it wouldn't be as impressive as somebody who would get to the finals, maybe even get to the
last call and then gets to BlizzCon. Yeah, you know, they're different.
Exactly.
I would never say that Handsome Guy is better than a player who makes it to last call, but just completely diminishing what he did just because it isn't the pinnacle of the most, you know, route ever. It's kind of ridiculous, really.
So RDU and Froden talked about this on Twitter. There was a back and forth, right?
Go ahead.
And so Froden basically saying he's the first person to achieve 2 championship in a season.
Oh yeah, 2. Sorry, I was saying 3.
Sorry.
Yes, yeah, 2.
It's 2, right?
Yeah, it was 2 championships in a second. Because there you're was right, like, Noxious. I was saying
in
3.
In the earlier stage of the year, there was another HCT for
Southeast
Asia.
And I guess the way he worded it was like it was being compared to American and EU, that no one has done it before, right? Mm-hmm. And I think RDU didn't like the way it was said in the terms of this direct comparison, because a handsome guy didn't have to go through the whole tournament mm-hmm. or his subsequent appearances. And that was a big discussion. It's obviously spilled over to Reddit as usual, as all drama. And, you know, brings up the question, like, Frodan's like behavior and RDU's behavior, and then other people started piling in, and it was just this whole thing.
I mean, it's just drama you know, just your typical, but it's really over nothing. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, it's not really nothing. My big question is, like, why do they have different rules across regions? Like, that's the big issue.
Okay, sure.
Like, this is just a problem with the system. It's like blaming the driver for a shitty car in this spot. Like, RDU is just lashing out at, you know, people, you know.
But I think RDU is probably lashing out more because, you know, last nut call's not getting that kind of attention.
But it's unfair. Like, it feels unfair from his perspective. And the point is that it is unfair if we're looking at the system as a whole, because there's this little pocket where, well, hey, sometimes you can just snowball out of control and get invited automatically. But I don't know that, like, we should be blaming any individuals that are participating in the system. Like, they didn't choose to be in those regions. Yeah. It just happens to be where they are. So I would rather, you know, hold Blizzard accountable for this more so than start harping on the drama between RDU and Handsome Guy or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think next year, I think we'll see all the regions, you know, be consistent and at least the structure of it all. But again, I actually think what they were doing in Asia was more in the right direction than what we've been doing in EU and NA. Mm-hmm. It would have been nice to see Tice in the other championships this year. Right. Just be invited straight to it. And then who knows? Tice could have been a 3-time winner or a 2-time winner too.
Well, there have been some invites for, like, over the years for Tice for a few events. Not necessarily like.
No, I'm talking about the champion, the actual seasonal championship, you know, tournaments. So. That's kind of what was happening with Handsome Guy, right? He didn't have to go through the prelims, which is a big deal because the prelims are a crazy gauntlet in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of reoccurrence, I think, is we talked about this last, so we really went through a lot of structure whenever we had the episode on that. But I don't know, Toast, what is your thoughts on it? Like, do you like the Asia structure, or do you actually like what we've been doing over here?
I like what we've been doing over here. I generally don't like anything that snowballs. Like, the thing is, you should be awarded for consistent behavior, right? Like, let's say you're top four every time. Mm-hmm. Like, there should be some, not compensation, but like reward for it. I'm not sure if they do it in North America. They have the point system, right? But I think that's only to get into the tournament. I don't like the fact that if you do really well in the first tournament, you get to skip a huge portion and jump straight to the second tournament. I think that was a problem in the early stages of Hearthstone in terms of invitational. It's always the popular people, like.
But that's not popular. That's actually based on merit. That's based on a win that you had previously.
But he doesn't have to go through the
gauntlet again.
Gauntlet, exactly.
I agree with. I don't mind that the fact that you'd get an auto invite. I think it would be great if, like, it was applied like to a lot of people. But the point is, like, when you have both system working differently, then somebody's got like a speed bump.
Sure. The inconsistency is not, I definitely agree with you guys there. And the inconsistency is not good between the regions, but it's just a question of which one, you know, is better. So Toast, you think what we're doing here, just having it readily, almost like starting over every season is what you think is right. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so I mean, that kind of concludes it, and this leads into Last Call, which is going to be, I believe, next week. So we'll see the top players, basically, and RDU being one of those guys, going at it. And that, you know, that tournament itself is a fierce tournament because these are the players that are the best, or they're either the best or they're the best grinders, you know, the best players that grind. It just in our in Hearthstone right now, so you should see some high level play during that.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on. Let's talk about I guess what we've been doing in Hearthstone this week, and this is kind of where we talk about decks for those of you maybe if you're tuning in for the first time, and just talk about just whatever we've been doing, any fun things. So the first thing to talk about is really just, this is the first week after the updates come out, you know, with all the nerfs and whatnot. So what have you guys been seeing? Like, what kind of trends have you guys been seeing on the ladder?
Shaman.
What? It didn't fix Shaman, dude.
Yeah. So I mean, I saw One Miracle Rogue because people slowed down.
Yeah.
Rogue just says, "Well, now I don't have to worry about my health as much, so yeah. I can play." But now, Temple Mage as well has come up a lot. I've noticed.
Like, oh, really?
Okay. Gained back a ton. I don't know if that's been your experience as well, but like, I'd say it's like 50% Shaman and then a mix of Temple Mage, Rogue, and Control Warrior for me. Like, that's pretty much what it's been.
Hmm. Okay. How about you, Toast?
I mean, I'm still in teens off ranking. Yeah, so at that level, you see a variety of weird stuff. You see a lot of priest, which is
that is weird
at that rank. But mostly temple mages. Shaman, I don't see as much shamans anymore.
Really? Okay.
Because I'm not sure if, you know, it's a ranking issue. Like, you just don't see that much shaman plays in the lower ranks. But I don't see them that often. And for me personally, I'm very happy about the Rock Fighter nerf because I'm not constantly worrying, holy shit, it's turn 6 and he's about to pound me for 10 damage.
Yeah.
And
that was aggravating.
Yeah, because it was just mind games, right? Like, you would alter your play for something that might not even happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just not having to worry about that anymore is a huge relief. And of course, Tuskar Totemic not high rolling you on turn 3. I still see people play Tuskar Totemic, but I personally do believe that Tuskar Totemic is not worth running.
Well, the stats say so, right? The thing is, if the meta shifts, then maybe it's still worth it. Like, one of the big deals about Tuskar is it obviously doesn't fit, like, every Shaman deck ever again, right? Like, it's not just going to be an auto-include.
Right.
I mean, for all its lifespan, whatever's left of it, poor guy, is about to rotate it out and suddenly it's in a spot where now I actually like how it's designed because it feels fair.
Mm-hmm.
And if you play a Totem Shaman deck and you get a cheaper thing from below with it, then all the better. You know, right. Good on you for playing a deck that has synergy that isn't just straight up you putting a lot of auto includes and making it work, because that's just boring.
Mm-hmm.
Wicked Witch Doctor lists have been very successful, from what I've noticed at least. They just seem very, very solid.
And yeah. Tuskar can still roll Air Totem for your Spirit Claws and whatnot, too. So there's still plenty of synergy with totems and different archetypes of shaman for it to potentially be viable in something, but not everything, which is good. I'm like you, Toast, actually. I'm in like the lower teens, and I haven't seen that much shaman, but I know that there's a ton of shaman in my near future. But right now, it's crazy how many actual control decks I run into, right, and just in that range. And it kind of sucks because I've been trying out Hunter. Because what I typically do whenever nerfs happen is I first just play the decks again, you know, like play the decks that used to be good and just really feel the effects of the nerf and then kind of get a sense for that, because I hate it when people just change stuff immediately without knowing for sure, you know, or having at least some kind of feel or data for it. You know, we see that in other games, right? When some type of update is announced, like Overwatch, for instance, everybody just stops playing. Like, when the nerf happens, they just stop playing that character just for a knee-jerk reaction.
Really? Okay.
And then eventually, a lot of times, it ends up coming back. Like, once people, you know, decide to, okay, we're going to stop trying to
keep figuring out. You mean Genji's not dead?
Yeah, sort of, you know, it's stuff like that, right? So that's kind of usually what I like to do. Definitely the Rock Biter has made a big impact in Tuskar, but I wouldn't say it's like enormous. And same goes for the Hunter, the Call
it's
of the Wild.
Big.
Yeah, it's definitely not as strong, but it's still plenty strong too.
I haven't seen a Yogg-Saron deck for the last...
Why? Is everybody retarded?
I played tons of Yogg-Saron decks.
That card is like 90% as good as it was. Like,
I've played a bunch and they've wrecked me. Like, they've wrecked me like old school.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe it's a public perception thing.
Playing against them because the card is just good right now. Like, I had to argue on the day of the patch when I came on to play my funny shaman control deck, this like super dank. Like, okay, I'm going to keep playing Yogg and see what happens. And it turns out it still clears the board most of the time. In fact, I'd say that it's just as good when the board is full than it was before, because it's got even less chances of, you know, bursting itself down. I mean, it sucks if it shadow steps itself. Life sucks. Or it vanishes. But it's one of those cases where he still works okay. So all the doom and gloom about disenchant Yogg, the lead VO god, Jesus is dead. I'm like, no, calm down. Like,
if anything, it just I think reaffirmed that the change was good. I mean, it was like an elegant change. It wasn't like one that just completely killed him. I mean, I would still worry if it was still good enough to be played like at the highest of levels. But right now, from what I could see, man, I played probably against 5 Yoggs, 6 Yoggs last night, and they casted like 8 to 9 spells. That's quite a bit. I mean, it could have been just a small sample size, of course, but that's pretty strong. If Yogg can cast like 8 spells, holy crap. It's bound to be good for them at that point.
Yeah. And I don't know if that was the right change they made to it. Like, the more I think about it, the more I wonder if that was like exactly what we needed it to do. Because I don't think decks that really wanted to run it, say Mage and Druid, will cut it. Like, it just doesn't seem like that would happen.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, the biggest problem I had was Tuskar Totemic. So ultimately, at the end of this patch, I don't give a shit. Like, I care. But I'm like, yeah, Yogg is a thing still. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Joseph?
Well, I haven't had any experience with Yogg-Saron yet.
Okay.
What? You haven't?
No, like,
you're kidding, right? I'm sure there was a video upcoming with new Yogg.
Yeah.
Don't lie to us.
I thought about doing a video where we go back and look at tournament Yogg-Sarons and just end it at the point where he either dies or transform, and see how many would have been different. Like, would I have decided the finals? Would I have decided the semifinals? Because it would have had
that'd be cool. Yeah,
rippling effects, right? Mm-hmm. I think someone did it for the 20 Yogg video, and he said that 2 games would have been completely turned around if Yogg had died when he died.
Yeah, if it had, like, stopped itself.
Yeah, like, it would have been the difference between a win and a loss.
Wait, so 2 out of 20 or just
2 out of 20?
Well, that's still a 10%, so that's
It's 10%.
Removing 10% out of a card's win rate. Well, although, since, I mean, the question is, like, did the other Yoggs...
Yeah, were they, like,
game,
like,
right?
Flipping? Yeah, board game-winning Yoggs.
Or, like, the question is, like, these 2 out of 20-ish Yoggs matter so much more than the other 18, let's say? Because if the others didn't matter, then they didn't really change the course of the game. So
exactly.
You need to see, like, how many Yoggs that mattered would have been different.
I think 10 Yoggs didn't do anything. Like, half the Yoggs didn't do anything.
That's a lot. Okay, that's a lot then.
So it's like 20% of the Yoggs that did something ended up just sucking.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's like a pretty big nerf to the card's efficiency.
Yeah.
But 20, you know, 20 games is a very small sample size.
Sure. With Yogg, yeah.
Of course.
It's their importance, right? This was like a championship game. And, you know, if it was the final game, it would have been the difference between champions, right? I don't think it was the final. I think it was just like the early qualifiers.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I'm just saying, like, this nerf will make a significant difference in the upcoming BlastCon and BlizzCon eventually.
Well, I guess, like, it might, but my big thing with Yogg is he's put into decks to add like a 1% to 2% extra win rate on top of what the deck already does, which is a huge edge over a long tournament. So let's assume we run with that 20% number. Like, it's still a 1.6% extra win rate if you're adding 2% baseline. It's still a 0.8 if you're adding 1. So you're still having an edge from having Yogg in your deck rather than not, right? I think. Unless you can find like a better substitute for him, which I can't think of one. Really? Because of standalone?
To your point, yeah. I think he's not clearly bad. You know, he's definitely right on the fringe right now. And, you know, at the top level, consistency actually is a big deal, right? Especially for the pro players. They don't generally like to mess with things that are have high variance. Yogg just happened to be one of those things that just had high variance, yet it was just consistently good, right?
Yeah.
So I think just lowering that, just even just a little bit, I think puts it in question. We'll still see some. I think we'll still see some top players running it. It'll be curious how many in Last Call actually run it, which would then feed into BlizzCon. But I'd be surprised not to see it at least once in the tournament. What's better than Yogg? Like in the Druid, like. The Druid's already good still. Like, are the Druids still good, even without Yogg? But what card would have as much impact as Yogg does right now?
All right.
I don't know. I can't really think of one.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's yeah, I can't think of another card. Or yeah. that could even have anywhere close to that impact.
Well, people used to say Deathwing was like the next substitute for it, but truth is, like, there's no real comparison. I mean, some people might choose to just play, hey, I'm going to slap in a Ragnaros for consistency if I wasn't running him, because he's not random and he's still pretty good. Well, he is random, but usually not so much. And he's still pretty good. The problem is when you play Yogg, I'd say right now Yogg is garbage if you play him alone on a board, on an empty board,
he's always been like that. Right?
Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't that bad. Maybe like 50, 50, it was bad before, but now it's like it's tremendously worse. It's like those cases where you have an empty board and you're fetching for some kind of way to close the game because the opponent's not offering anything. Now the Yogg is just horrible compared to what it used to be. But on those full boards that you had no chance of winning against, I think on average he's like, I don't know, as those said, probably like 80% is good.
I want to kind of talk about like the whole nerf cycle, because this marks the second year in a row where, like, before BlizzCon, that made a change.
Yeah.
Last year was Grim Patron, right?
Yeah.
After community outcry. And, like, the question is, like, a lot of pro players are happy about it. You know, some of them have been playing with the idea of Tusker and Totemic and, you know, Doomhammer and Rockbiter. And I'm like, everyone's happy that things got changed, but
sure,
it's another case of, you know, a lot of preparation leading up to this point has to kind of be tossed out the window because the meta was changed by Blizzard after community outcry and a month before the biggest Hearthstone tournament ever. And just wondering, like, how you guys feel about this cycle where, you know, because the complaint started in Old Gods, right? With Tunnel Truck, Tusker, and 4-mana 7-7.
Tusker Totemic started on day one of the card existing in TGT. It just never happened to be an issue because we hadn't gotten to the point where Think From Below blew the totem deck, you know, into, or just like shoved it in our face.
Right.
Well, Shaman overall just wasn't powerful, like tier one yet.
Sure.
And then once it got to tier one, then that's how it always is. Once stuff gets to tier one, that's when we start nitpicking at things.
Yeah, which is, I get a lot of shit for that because I call cards OP even though they're not playable now. It's like, I think Resurrect and Onyx Bishop are completely fucking broken.
I think they're broken.
But
too.
But no one in the community is going to be like, yeah, Noxious, you tell him. Design isn't like your strong. No, like until Priest completely shuts down your fucking meta. Mm-hmm. You will not complain about it, and then it does, and then you bitch. But the truth is, those cards are broken. And it's one of those cases where I just think the devs don't have, or at least didn't have, I don't know about now and going forward, but didn't have like a strong enough grasp on their game mechanics to understand just how absurd it is to make the cards that they did. It's like a lot of factors coming in together,
right.
Which I guess, like, to your point, it makes me worried that the devs don't take control of the nerfs and balance until it's like way too late. That's what worries me the most about the whole thing.
I mean, to answer your question, Toast, like, how do I feel about the cycles being right before the big tournament? I think if it was an issue or if it was more changes that were happening more on a regular basis and it wasn't because of some kind of, you know, some crazy outcry, you know, with even just the state of the game being at in a weird, bad place, I think I would have more of a problem with it, you know, because, you know, if the game's in a good state and then you're changing it just for the sake of changing it, you know, whatever dev cycle, instead of really taking your championship into account, then yeah, I would have a problem with it. But the last thing I want to see is Tuskar, you know, as it was before, and Yogg as it was on the stage at BlizzCon. I think that would have just been a disaster, and I am absolutely okay with the players having to adjust, because that's part of Hearthstone too, just to see who can adjust to this kind of meta more quickly or not. So I'm not completely okay with them changing it, especially when the state of the game and how we all felt about the game was the way it was.
Okay. My question. Okay. How about this? If the community didn't complain about Tusker and didn't complain about Yogg-Saron, do you think these changes would have been made?
No, they wouldn't have been. And that's my problem with it, is because Blizzard doesn't like, God, this is what tilts me about it, because it's like, it's a game design issue. It's not a, like, Brian Kibler actually made a really good point, which had to do with perception, right? He said, you know, Yogg isn't exactly as good as people say he is, but the perception of the game and its competitive legitimacy, like, it's just like people just throw it out the window. Nobody believes Hearthstone takes skill when Yogg takes the tournament, for instance. So, like, there is a portion of it which is a perception issue that Blizzard wants to tackle to maintain the validity of Hearthstone in the esports scene. On the other end, it boggles my mind that a lot of these problems weren't foreseen. I don't mind the Yogg not being foreseen, because the amount of variables and the amount of times where you have to come up with the exactly right deck list for Druid, for instance, to just get the perfect storm brewing where it's just completely toxic. But like Tuskar Totemic, how did that, like, how do you not see it on your own when you make the card? Like, how does that not come up when you design and you're brainstorming, or even a month afterwards? Even if nobody plays the card, like, what?
I think they do see it, and I think it's one of those things where whenever there are weaker classes or whatnot, I mean, this is just my take on it. Whenever there are weaker classes, they do allow just powerful cards to happen. And I think Tuskar is one of those things where they probably saw it. They probably knew that you know, half the time it would roll something that would make it incredibly good, and then half the time they would roll something that was probably what the intention of the card was to begin with. It was just to add another token that synergized with, you know, some other element of the deck, which is what it is now, right? That was the biggest thing for me with Tuskar. It's just like, it just doesn't make sense that you could get variants that's, you know, like a value that's like
very wide,
6,
right?
6, yeah. Or, I mean, you can just call Flame Tongue or Mana Tide Totem. I mean, you can gauge that however you want, but that's extreme amounts of value. That's going to be like 5 mana for that, you know, for something that Tuskar is just doing right now, right? And then like baseline, you know, just having a 3/2 and a 0/2, that's fair value right there, especially when it has synergy with Spirit Claws, or it has synergy with Primal Fusion or anything
stuff
like
you
that.
Do.
Yeah.
Stuff you do. I mean, Think from Below and everything else is just, it's just good. Yeah. Right? And you don't need the extra good on top of it. It's like if I told you Innervate also added a coin to your hand, it's like, no, fuck you. Like, I don't want a 20% chance for Innervate to come back as a coin. Like, what is that? Like, how absurd is this? It makes no sense.
Yeah, and again, like I was saying in some previous episodes, we're the product of some of this stuff, too. They don't have to react to it, but we're the ones that are the complainers too. And I think some of these type of big moves in terms of trying to get, you know, classes relevant, which we might see in the near future with Priest, but is based on all of us complaining and in a way not being patient, and some of it's rightfully so. But at times I think, you know, the overall design of the game, you know, takes a hit because of it too. Yeah. So it is a tough job designing for this game when you're trying to obviously please us constantly. But at the same time, you know, you still have to have a general scope of the game and do what's best in long term for the game.
Yeah, I wish they did more on their own. Like, I'll be honest, I was very surprised, pleasantly surprised, right, when I saw Rockbiter changed. Although Rockbiter, like, that should have been changed in the Force of Nature patch, but whatever. I was happy when I saw Execute change, for instance, because I did not see that one coming. You know, like, that's one of those cards that's like the nerf that makes me the happiest of all the ones that happened, because they did something nobody thought they'd do. And they saw a problem that we didn't bitch about.
Yep.
So they've been doing stuff that didn't rely on, hey, how much does Reddit hate us right now? No, it's like, we have this problem, let's tackle it. And that just felt good, because it's one of those things where I'd like there to be balance changes that come out. Where Blizzard tells us, here's the imbalance, and if you think that's not right, you're wrong. And they just take the reins of the balance instead of letting it just go crazy. I would like them to have a more active hand in it, basically, is what I'd like.
I mean, the nerfs, right? Yeah. Like, the nerfs is
weird. Nerfs and buffs, I don't give a shit what they do. Just really? As long as there's... Yeah, buffs are fine. I don't mind buffs. But, like, if the only way they're going to have an active hand in it is releasing new cards, I'm not interested. It's just not compelling. Like, I can make new cards, too, to fix problems. And sometimes I don't even fix them. I release, you know, Little Exorcist to fix fucking Undertaker. Like, it doesn't... I've seen Hearthstone evolve, and I've never seen a card come out to fix a problem and fixed it.
Yeah. Not yet. Well, that's covering up a problem. That's not really fixing the
but
problem.
That's right? The problem is I'd rather they just change stuff as opposed to add layers and layers and layers of dirt to try to bury it. Like, yeah, that's not what we need at this point.
Yeah. Toast, you're wanting to add something?
Go ahead. Sorry, did I keep cutting you off?
No, sorry. I agree with Noxious. Like, when I saw the execute and the charge change, I didn't see any complaints about that. Well, I mean, there's a little complaints about execute, but it's more like, you know, rolling your eyes saying, oh my god, one man, I remove a minion. But when I saw those changes, like, it's great because it shows that Blizzard are paying attention beyond that what everyone's complaining about.
Yeah.
I think if changes like that can happen without pitchforks coming out, without, you know, all this anger and all this, like, outrage, like, everyone will be so happy. Like Lox just said, like, they're able to balance card without requiring us to go full on crazy. But it seems like the only times they do these balance patches is when the community goes, you know, gets fed up with it and starts rioting. So we kind of associate this whole, like, if the game's bad, and we gotta start breaking shit.
Yeah, that's that's what the pitchforks do.
And it's a terrible environment. But it's been like this since the start of Hearthstone. Like back with Undertaker, you know, it came out in Naxxramas, and in GBG they introduced cards like Scarlet Purifier that deals damage to Deathrattle.
Oh yeah.
And Low Exorcist, which gains health and attack based on Deathrattle. It's like okay. I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to counter this Death Rattle Undertaker deck. And obviously that shit didn't work, but they didn't change it until like a month after. It's like
more than that. It was more, I don't know how long it was.
It definitely came quite a bit after their,
maybe 3 or 4 months after.
Yeah. It was like at least I think 2 months after GVG. Cause we had 4 months between Nax and GVG. And it was like 2 months after that Undertaker got changed.
Yeah. And with, Grim Patron, it was a Black Rock Mountain thing, right? Yep. And TDT, they tried to introduce some, you know, anti-Grim Patron cards like
Eadric the Pure,
Chilmaw. And Doshed didn't work either. And it took like 2 more months or like 3 more months. And a month before BlizzCon, it's like, okay, TDT didn't solve the issue. Let's just change stuff. And like, I feel the same with this year as well. It's like Karazhan made Shaman even stronger with Maelstrom Portal and Spirit Claws. But
how did that not get how did that not just get looked at? They saw the state of Shaman already before Karazhan. Why did they not make it like last second change? Make that Spirit Claw like 2 durability and Maelstrom Portal summons nothing. Call it Maelstrom. That's it. Like, I don't how. It's like, just tune something down just a little bit.
I think those cards are actually fine if they were released next year.
They just got
released early. And I'm going to remind you guys, remember when I wanted to talk about Spirit Claws on that episode of Value Town? And you guys I think Ray was like, oh, why do you want to talk about this card? You know what I mean?
Really?
And, because nobody saw a lot of people didn't see the potential of that card. Like,
Karazhan party. Like, I was at the Karazhan party for the reveal. Yeah. When it came up, I was with Dog, and
I thought it was good too.
Card, we were talking about just how broken it looked. It would just need testing to confirm it, but it just looked completely busted.
Yeah. It's a card that I think will make up for some of the cards that will be gone next year.
Hopefully.
Like Trog Totem Golem. It's going to need that type of early game coming up. So I think they released that just a little too early. But to your point, to your guys' points, I like to see that they're still have a general scope for their design. So changing abusive, changing, execute, I think was great. And now there's a lot of talk about Hex, right? I mean,
there's always been a lot of talk.
Exactly. And Hex has been another one of those cards that I think we've always thought was incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. But these kind of things don't get looked at least from the community standpoint, until, you know, we do have overpowered, or at least we've had a class that's just been the reigning champion for a long time now. So that's interesting. And hopefully they do more of that. I don't see it being like a pervasive thing. I'm sure they do have a list of cards that they are always watching, but they do have some kind of time frame, I feel, that where they want to see if people can adapt to it, you know, or can problem solve it. I just think that time period is probably too long. Like, it's, you know, they do have 40 million, 50 million people playing this game. And I think the data comes in pretty quickly for when cards are.
Well, how to sort it? That's the problem. It's like, it's easy to look at data until you figure out, like, you have to metadata it, right? If you looked at Patreon back then, there was no problem statistically. You had to look at what it did. Like, you had to look at what it did beyond the stats, because the stats tell you jack shit. Like, you have to kill patron and then have a new meta spawn into your simulation to figure out, yeah, this meta has been really stale because of this one card. How about we change it? Like, you, the data will never tell you Grim Patron is imbalanced. It will never do that. You can't see outliers. You can only see outliers with the data. It's irrelevant beyond that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, data is very useful, but you can spin it in a way that tells a completely different story. Like, so, as I said, Grim Patron has a sub 50% win rate.
Yeah.
But does it tell you that the meta is either Grim Patron or anti-Grim Patron? And doesn't tell you that that 50% win rate is, you know, OTKs for like 50 HP. It's like those wins are very disgusting wins that, you know, just ruins people's day. But yeah, statistically, it's fine. 50%. That's what you want to aim for.
I guess it's counters.
No, you guys, dude, you guys are looking at, dude, they have much more sophisticated statistics than we're talking about right now.
How can they know a patron creates a metagame? Like, how can you tie in patron's influence to the ladder? How can you derive the decks that could be from the patron that is until you actually kill it, right? You'd have to run a simulation with it somehow. My point is they have to do metadata analysis on it, but I don't even know how much of that they have.
I think they have tons of data.
Sure. I think they have a lot. Now, what derivatives of that data that they have and they look at, you know, that might be another question, but they have all the data. So it's just a matter of figuring out, you know, analyst hat, right? And figuring out what data matters and what data, you know, what does this actually mean, or what does this end this together? What, you know, and what does it mean? So
I just didn't like the way that they threw out that number. 50%, the sub 50% number to justify Grim Patron, because it's such a like 50%, it's fine, it doesn't go into it, and then a week later they're like, okay, we're changing Grim Patron. It's like,
yeah,
such a PR answer to me.
They had, like, there were a lot of discussions with the pros, right? So I think they took the word of the pros about it, or on it rather than like rely on their data at that point. So I'm sure after the patron episode, they've been trying to restructure like how they balance things. If it's not just going to be that 50% or, you know, above or under 50%, what else do we look at? And I'm sure that the patron deck forced them to evaluate a lot more stuff than just win rates in order to just modify the metagame dynamically instead of waiting for a long period of time. Because even if everything is 50-50, within a certain pocket of the metagame, if you have like three elements within that metagame, then, you know, what else is not there? That's the data that they have to.
Gosh, we should hopefully one of these days we'll get, I don't know, who, somebody on, like Mike on or something, and we can ask him all these questions, because
it'd be cool to find that's what I got from Mike a while back, and I'm like, sure, I guess the win rate of Dr. Boom is nullified by BGH, and again, we haven't solved the problem. It's easy to say Dr. Boom's fine because BGH and the variance of it is usually mitigated by a billion other factors. But Dr. Boom was arguably stifling decks, not because it like prevented deck building, just because it forced you to put BGH or an answer to it in your deck.
So, I mean, it's both. It was just too good a value of both, to not put it in, and too good a value for you not to put BGH in. That's a different kind of stifling. But
it is still another problem where you have the data. I mean, I'm sure they've changed the way they look at it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure if Mike came back on, he'd tell us that they're just doing a lot better at balancing.
Well, I think they are. So from the standpoint of cards like Dr. Boom, I think they are doing better. Like, we don't have those crazy common, like, non-class cards that are just in every single deck, right? We don't have many of them, at least. So from that standpoint, they have improved quite a bit. But there's, you know, obviously some more work to do. All right. Anyway, we talked about that enough. I'm sure some people are just like, gosh, all right.
Stop talking about competitive.
All right, let's talk about some decks.
I really like the way they've designed. Like, by the way, just like going back to one thing, I really like the way Karazhan was designed in terms of the aesthetic of cards. I just wish like there were like new mechanics introduced. And that kind of ties into Mechatork's Workshop. But overall, I think the expansion was just good. Like, it was just a decent expansion. After, like, everything settles down, I think the design of it
Meaning the cards and
interesting
the
than you know Dr. Boom GVG level stuff. It was just
so just the cards, right? And
sure,
and everything else. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
It's setting up a Beast Druid, Steel Rogue, and Resurrect Priest for the future.
Yeah,
I'm terrified of Priest next.
Resurrect Priest is not a good way to go.
it's very scary. If it's ever,
not a good way to go,
what do you
I'm
do?
Scared.
Yes.
What do you do?
I'm definitely scared too. All right, let's talk about some of the cool decks that we've been fun decks we've been playing.
Yeah.
Ever since the change. So I brought my Hunter, and this is kind of like a Hunter that I talked about, I think last week or the week before, but I thought it was would be worth just revisiting just because we've had some changes. And so this is the one that had Avian Watcher in it. And what's cool is that I play this, and you know, it was more for a discussion point for the show last time, and just Avian Watcher being a card that's you know just not looked at because of all the other Hunter cards. But then I had somebody message me that he's run into like 5 Avian Watcher Hunters ever since the show, so that's kind of neat.
Interesting.
So anyways, yeah, so this is a similar deck. The only difference is I added Medivh into it. And I might have added like Bear Trap or Catrick, like maybe a different combination of that. And this deck's actually been pretty good, surprisingly, against Shaman. It just it struggles against anything that's heavy control, just because it doesn't have the legs. Like,
well, you don't have Quickshot, right?
Yeah, it doesn't have Quickshot too. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But Bear Trap actually is surprisingly pretty like good. Like it helps fight at least in the beginning, and then Avian Watcher even absorbs quite a bit. Just having a standalone taunt, there's like not many of those anymore, so having a nice solid taunt 4/7 taunt in there is like crazy good. But yeah, overall I think this Hunter is the best one I've played so far. I mean, Medivh you could probably replace, and lately I've played against so many decks that have Harrison Jones that it's like I probably shouldn't play Medivh at this point, but when you do land an Atiesh on Call of the Wilds, it's like you win.
Yeah, but I prefer filling that slot with Ragnaros usually. But
yeah, Rag would probably, it's going to be obviously more consistent and faster, but that's not as fun, you know? Like, everybody yeah, plays sure. Rag and it's going to, yeah. You know.
You have King Crush out of...
Yeah. But I feel like outside the whole Harrison Jones, before that, you know, that and Ooze was being played more and more, I feel like Medivh was just like... just out of range of being played, just barely out of range, not like our Arch Thief or Fom range, but just barely, because whenever you could follow it up, if Atiesh did land, then it would be amazing instantly, like the turn after, like it's just instantly good. But right now it's just, I think it's still out of range for being really, really good.
Yeah, it's tough. Like the fact that you're running like the Secret Hunter build obviously means like the whole mid-range beast approach is a bit tougher to pull off. But because you've put in like those 4/2 drops, it's kind of like there's a lot of Secret Hunter builds that exist. And I don't think the best one's been figured out quite yet. Like there's no set build for it. And I'm talking not just, you know, which secrets do you play, but rather like how many beasts do you put in? Do you play in festivals? Like how deep do you go in the whole beast aspect of Hunter? Because you can't go too deep because then suddenly... why secrets? Like it's tough to find that balance, but I'm interested to see how well this kind of deck fares off against the current meta, because you have a lot of like a really huge amount of early plays that aren't just coin cloaked Huntress win.
Right.
You actually have 2 drops.
Yeah. I mean, the kindly grandmother is I have to admit is one of the cards I think I missed on like when initially evaluating it, because I thought that card would be insanely good. For Hunter, like really making mid-range even more consistent than it was before and really pushing it to the top. But that card, honestly, like if it wasn't for like Bear Traps landing sometimes, that card is just really, really weak by itself and makes you almost want to have to play things like Abusives and crap like that. And you've seen some Hyenas lately too, right? Because of it.
But I mean, Abusive's gone, right? So like yeah, the hybrid exactly. Build of Hunter is a lot. Like the thing with Abusive that was so good, especially in decks that aren't Zoo, is it was a playable 1-drop.
Yeah, it was.
One that wasn't Fiery Bat. So,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. You tried any Hunter, Toast?
No, not really. I'm not a big fan of Hunter. But look at your list. Well, the Medivh is very very greedy with 2 Call of the Wilds, right? Do you find yourself like having Medivh but having to play like a secret... or Animal Companion, or do you consistently able to play Call of the Wild on turn 9? Because it is the late game, right? Chances are you have at least one Call of the Wild.
To be honest, like, there hasn't been many times where I've played Call of the Wild before Medivh. I mean, you get like a lot of draws to get Medivh, you know, in those first 8 turns. But maybe a few times I've had to play, just some of the secrets and whatnot. But, Hunter's just strong, like, usually mid game anyways. So there's some games I just win without even playing Medivh. Sometimes not even like both Call of the Wild. So
your build is with the Avian Watcher is interesting because I've seen a lot of people play. Cause I feel like the Houndmaster and the Watcher together kind of fill this defensive role that you're trying to achieve in this type of deck. But it was the Curator approach that VLPS.
That's right.
And I think Strifecore played in a tournament.
Yeah, that's good too.
The idea is you play your Drakes in your mid game for a draw to get to Call of the Wild more reliably, obviously. And I wonder if you're playing Medivh, like, is that something you want to be doing? Like, do you need deadly shots? Do you not want quick shots instead? Like, what if you cut out Kindly Grandmother, you keep the Elix, and then maybe you find more slots? Maybe quick shots for late game cycle or just, you know, empty hand.
That's pretty much what everybody keeps telling me is to add quick shots.
No, like, I'm just trying to figure out, like, do you even want Drakes in the deck? Because that's where I'm trying to go there. Is like, you don't want to play Curator because you've already committed to this build specifically. Like, can you technically afford it? Like, is there a world in which you can find room for Curator, one Drake,
I don't think you can do
the 4 one drops and play one quick shot?
Like, I don't think you can do the Curator build with so many secrets. Like, it's not a secret deck, I think.
That's VLPS. Yeah, VLPS is.
Heavy secrets? Okay, I wasn't sure.
It was even like deeper on secrets than you are. Like, Curator, double Drake. With a bunch of secrets, and it ran the beasts, which were only high mains, I think. And basically, the way it goes is you play Curator, you draw second Drake or one Drake plus high main always. So you have a follow up.
Wow. Okay.
Your deck can probably fit in like if you cut Kindly Grandmothers, and say like the deadly shots for whatever reason, you can find room for like double quick shot Curator and one.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. And it gives you like card draw plus. Removal in the early game while removing the grandmothers, which seem to be
they're kind of weak. They're too passive. That's the problem. And like, unless you're playing something that does benefit from just, I guess, crashing minions like a hyena or something like that, it's harder to play that card now.
I like the idea of Medivh though. Like, now, especially now that Call is 9. Like, they don't fight with each other for that turn 8.
Oh, it was right? No, dude. I loved it when it was at 8 because I was so bad. I hold the coin. Like, I always held the coin to bridge 7 to Medivh into Call. And it's ridiculous. God. You get ridiculous stuff at 8. I mean, 9's good too, but 8 is even better.
So. Yeah, but you fight for that slot too much, right? I don't know. Maybe I would always play Call first, I think, if I had both.
Yeah.
That's probably true. You should play Call first. Let me just emphasize that you should play Call first. But anyways, yeah, give this a try, guys, and maybe send your versions of this to me. That'd be cool. All right, next up we got Shaman from Noxious here, which has the Oxeron in it, baby.
Yeah, but it's not a Yogg Shaman. It's actually just a control Shaman that happens to have Yogg. So I don't know if anybody's familiar with the deck that AP Drop put together like 2 months ago, I think, at this point. So it was a very heavy control Shaman list, ran like double Mana Tide. And the point is, you're not even Concede Shaman or Bog Champ Shaman, where you face this Manipulator, Ancestral Spirit, because that's the hex. You don't do that. That's too good. Yeah. And too weak at the same time. This is an Elise, you know, against control decks. You play Elise, and you can win that way. So you're basically a control warrior. But because you have Elemental Destruction, Maelstrom, and Lightning Storm, you actually have an answer to stuff. Because Elemental Destruction is the only AoE in the game that is good right now. Brawl is not even close. Like, I think just Elemental Destruction is just the best AoE we have.
Who knew Shaman was our best priest, man?
Yeah, that's pretty much what they are right now.
Best heal, best removal.
It's ridiculous, right? Like, this looks like if all these spells... Like, this deck plays like a priest deck, a control priest.
Yeah.
Right. It's just got all the better stuff, which is kind of tilting because you play priest, you're like, oh, can I circle? Yay. And they go like Elemental Destruction, Lava Shock, your turn. You're like, what? What have I done with my life? it's very slow of a deck.
But I like the Justicar. I don't play against too much control Shaman, Okay. But if they get Justicar Trueheart and they play it, it's one of the most tilting thing ever.
Really?
Nobody sees it coming, man. And you win 100%. Like, if you ever have time to play Justicar, when you have, if you ever get into a game where you have time to play Justicar, you've won it. And it's one of those weird cases where it's really hard to play, but it solidifies a lead so stupidly. It's so tough for people to stop it because it looks like a bad card. And really, for Shaman, it is. Like, it's just bad. It's just, that's not what Shaman, like the typical builds, want to do. But this lets you just spell damage once and they go, well, I have to kill this because he's just going to get a second one and a third one. And suddenly Maelstrom Portal hits for five and they can't play any minions because you have a 2-mana flame strike. And so they keep chipping away at totems. So every single totem you play that has spell damage is, you know, either has taunt. And if you're against aggro, you just Stone Claw, guaranteed.
Right.
I think in terms of the best Justicar hero power, Shaman beats Warrior.
Yeah.
The problem with Shaman is chances are getting to a position where you can play Justicar is extremely hard.
Yeah.
And it takes like a couple of turns for you to get like full value. But if you can survive the Justicar turn and the turn after, that hero power is the most tilting thing ever because suddenly every spell is hitting for one damage extra. And if you're an aggro deck and you're just trying to get that little bit of damage in, it's a taunt every turn. And eventually the Shaman's going to draw into his two healing ways or the Lazio combo, in which case it's game over.
I don't think I've ever actually heard anybody say that the Justicar hero power totem is, or hero power generally is second to the hero. Wow, that's
insane. Crazy.
I can be honest. I've only ever done it like one time, like ever.
Okay,
so
yeah, it's just really hard to get to that point as a shaman. As a warrior, it's really...
does it very, very well too. Like I was surprised when AP Drop came up with this because, well, with a similar list, it's not exactly the list he ran, but like somebody then iterated on it and cut Justicar and put in Curator, Scarab, and Double Drake, and they cut Manatides. I don't think cutting Justicar out of that deck is something I ever want to do, but I could see why somebody would try to play a bit more defensively. Mm-hmm. When that list came out, that's when I realized, well, that's it. Like, finally, Shaman has the best aggro deck, the best mid-range deck, the best control deck. Like, in a control mirror match, it's tough. Like, if I'm against a warrior, for instance, and they know what I'm playing, they'll win. It's almost impossible.
With this one, that's true.
But if they don't know what I'm running, then they play Acolytes on curve, I make them overdraw, and I automatically win. Like, that's one of those things where if there's a war of information and they assume you're something you're not, you still win with this every time.
It's powerful.
Pretty crazy.
The surprise factor is a big part of it.
On ladder,
most people assume you're mid-range or aggro, and they just flip the board because they're expecting that 4-mana 7/7.
Right.
And instead, you drop a Doomsayer, you drop a Maelstrom Portal, a Stormcrack, and suddenly the cards they needed to save, they just played it all out, and they can't really recover from that. So for me, like every time I play against this kind of deck, it's always caught me off guard, and I threw away my win condition because of it.
Every time, people just play stuff. Like, I wouldn't play this in a tournament if your opponent can see your deck list. They'll just harm you.
That'd be hell, dude.
I mean, one of the upsides of this deck, though, is that it just doesn't lose to mid-range Shaman.
Yeah, like, it never does.
The really big deal is if you're facing off against a bunch of, you know, mid-range Shaman, just play this and you'll climb all the way to the top in no time. Like, you just, they can't stop you from... You know, double Stormcrack for golems. You've got Maelstrom Portals with spell damage. You've got double elemental destruction, double storm. Come on. Like, at some point, they have no way to refuel the board.
It's really, I would say, six cards that literally beats it. It's elemental destruction, it's things from below, and it's healing wave. I mean, you can even say a Hell's Deal in there if you want, but those cards beat mid-range. And I played a lot of control Shaman, and it has been the best answer to mid-range and aggro Shaman for a while now. So it's crazy how good it is. But elemental destruction is just incredible. And, you know, when you can play a 5/5 behind it, it's like no other class can do that. No other class can clear the board like completely, not even just
play something
that's worth, you know, four and a half mana normally,
but,
right?
The most insane part is when you have played Justicar and you get a late game clear on elemental destruction, and then you just make a spell damage totem after the fact. And then they can't put anything down. Like, it's just, it's a really irritating deck to play against, and the Scarab version is even more tilting.
Yeah,
because they end up just getting an extra Elemental Destruction or an extra Storm.
Oh,
or extra...
that's true. You always just... play Scarab. I don't play Scarab enough, man. That's not fun.
I don't like it that much. But in this deck, you could cut Ancestral Knowledge and maybe include it instead.
Yeah,
but it's just like I'm on the fence still.
Yeah, I mean, Shaman. It kind of sucks because we complain. Well, we don't complain about everything in Shaman, but Shaman's so strong, and there's just general dislike towards Shaman because of it. But at the same time, Shaman is the richest, class right now. Like, if I were doing this kind of sideboard thing, I'm hoping to do it would be like a Shaman would be a great candidate for that kind of format, right? And so I hope we don't get too far away from that, because this is this class has a lot of variety. You can play control and you can play aggro, and it's distinct too. They're not like overlapping much, and that's really, really cool that it has that many capabilities. But the heal is just insane. I mean, you can heal up to just one thing from Hell's Deal. Let's just say it's 30.
Like
one thing is 30 from Hell's Deal, and then you get 8, 20, like 14 and 14.
Well, against mid range, it's great. Like against aggro, it's also pretty good. Yeah. The big problem is you run into, say, OTK Worgen was a problem prior to this.
Yeah, that's always a problem.
If you didn't get Jessicar, if you did, you won, because they can't go through 5 Stone Claws as warrior. But if you run into Freeze Mage or Malgo's Druid that knows what you are, they'll save up double Innervate, they'll save up Moonfire, Roots, and you're dead from 35. Mm-hmm. It's just. OTK decks are always good against those types of priest-like max 30 health decks.
OTK spells, in particular, spell damage is there's nothing you can do against it. Yeah, totally. Yeah,
Rogue isn't too bad either if they get the Malagos list. I've seen a lot of those.
Yeah, back. Totally. Okay, well, let's move on. I think Toast has one that.
It's just an example, but I mostly want to talk about a Bonch Yashraj deck. So the one I have up here, it's a little bit outdated because of Call of the Wild, but it's the serious Bonch Yashraj deck for Hunter. But I've been having fun with it. I've made a couple of videos regarding Bonch Yashraj, and there's so much different version of it. So Kalento and I recently did the Renounced Darkness version, where Bonch Yashraj 2 Renounced Darkness and all Warlock spells, because this gives you a bit more options. If you draw Yashraj too early, you can still Renounce Darkness and get minions in your deck, because usually there's only 2 minions in your deck. But with Renounce Darkness, you can add more. I mean, Renounce Darkness itself is a fun RNG card. And the one I did a video on was the super, super greedy one involving Rogue. In which case you play Barnes on turn
4. Oh, right.
And Yashraj. Yeah. Prep gang up. Yeah. So if you kill one of your Yashraj, it's going to pull out another one. And that one's going to pull out another one.
Yep.
Because without the gang up, you pull out the one Yashraj. And if they somehow manage to deal with that, you're going to lose the game because you have 0 minions left. But it's the definition of a high roll Barnes deck, right?
It's the definition of a highlight reel deck.
Exactly. Statistically, I think you have a 35% chance to pull it off.
And then when you do pull it off, I've done it too. And I think it was 50% instant concede or something like that. I think my stats were something where they literally half the time you get it, they instantly concede.
Yeah. So with the A-bar one, you have a lot of backup plans, because Call of the Wild, Animal Companion, these are all minions that are spells.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't even have to pull off the combo. But the Barnes combo is just such a great tempo advantage. Even if they do manage to kill it, you're so far ahead that it doesn't matter if you don't play another minion card for the rest of the game. Your lead is so incredibly high. Eventually you're going to be able to just out-tempo them.
All the classes that can come close to capitalizing on this, I play Barnes, you hex it, you hex the Yashraj.
Yeah.
My life sucks. Of all the classes to which this can happen, going all in with Hunter, going into turn 5 is I play a 3 cost bow and I smash in the face for 2, for my 1/1 and my 0/1.
Right.
Well, okay. It really hurts. So, do you play this? Have you played this this season yet? Or
not this season. I'm not sensing nerf yet.
Okay, I want to see how it fares with the 9 mana call, because one of the big things with this deck is the comeback from call late game, as you said.
It's I mean, it's going to be worse, right?
Yeah, for sure.
There's no question it's going to be worse, so I don't think it'll, I think it'll still accomplish. I mean, this is like a fun deck. This is like a deck just to get some.
It gets
some
a legend. Good
laugh. Yeah, well, that's true. It did get to legend. Before people knew about it, I guess. They can't really do much about it.
Though. Like, you can't, like,
you can't really do much about it. It's like,
even if you know what, like, how do you know what it is? It might just be a hunter with a shitty draw. And Barnes comes down, you're like, well, okay.
Yeah. You guys should try this. If you never tried this deck out, you should at least play it once, because it is pretty fun when you pull it off.
Yeah.
Okay, well, why don't we do Mechatorp's Workshop now? Yes. And
yes. Okay.
And Mechatorp's Workshop, for those of you that are just tuning in, is a segment that we do where we come up with our own cards, custom cards, just kind of throw some ideas out there, you know, just some fun ideas, some maybe serious ideas sometimes, and just have a good time with it. So I brought one rogue card first, and it's called Masquerader. So it's a 2-mana card, 1/5. Stats. At the start of your turn, this becomes a copy of another random minion on the battlefield. It's an epic card. So this isn't like exactly what I was hoping for. Actually, I wanted to name it Master of Disguise, but obviously that name was already taken.
So is it supposed to change every turn?
Yeah, so it's supposed to change every turn.
In your hand or on the field?
No, on the board.
On the board, yeah. Wow.
No, it's like, okay, so it should actually read, like, it copies the stats and then it, because, like, as I read it now, it just, like, transforms and never returns to what it
was. Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe the wording's, like, maybe not completely clear. But the motive, so what I wanted was, I wanted essentially a card that that required some kind of setup for it by you, or some kind of preventative measures or that sort of bit. And your opponent can do the same, where this card would basically morph into different things based on what's on the board. And,
okay.
Yeah, and you can play around with it. So sometimes you obviously high priority kill it, because you know there is some very, very distinct cards or very valuable cards that are on the board. Or sometimes you like purposely don't do anything to it because there's nothing on the board that's of value, or you want it to become like a 0/2 totem or something like that, right?
But does it just change the stats or the ability as well?
It like morphs into it. It turns into it.
Like Shifter Zeros style.
It's like Shifter Zeros, but on the board. But it's limited. It's not random minion. It's limited to what's on the board.
So yeah, sure. It's another minion, like another random minion on the battlefield.
Yeah. And you know, and the whole concept was being like, you know, Mystique or something like that, right? Just like literally the morphing into that card, at least for that turn, and you know, getting the benefits of it too, right? If you actually morph into Air Totem, then you get the spell damage too, which is kind of interesting.
Okay.
But I figured it was something that was kind of fun, but at the same time, you could play around it. Right, both sides of the board, and that's the kind of cards I generally like, are things that either require setup or you know allow for both parties to just manipulate the board in a very smart way.
All right,
yeah,
I like the
another link to the new card if you want to reword it. But go ahead, sorry.
I like the point about being able to play against it, mm-hmm. like dropping a shitty card like
Domo.
Yeah. Like give him a dancing sword or whatever, like
exactly.
Okay, let me update it real quick so you guys can.
I really like the idea of it transforming every turn. I just think like if it has too much health, then there's little counterplay to it, like the opponent can keep it alive. Like let's assume I don't have something to offer it, right? I'm playing a control deck, I have no minions but Rag. You play this and you have another minion you'd like to copy. I can't kill it easily, mm-hmm. As like with the amount of health that it's got. So maybe like either 3-mana 1/5 or 2-mana 1/4, like the Armorsmith mm-hmm. level of health,
yeah. would
be a bit more in line with something that can be managed early game or later in the state, like later.
Yeah,
in the game.
The only reason I put it 1/5 is just like I wanted it to live. You know what I mean? So that it would have, or at least it would have a high chance.
You can conceal it, right?
Well, so, I mean, you couldn't conceal. You'd have to play conceal, sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. At 1/5, the stat base is pretty high. Like, that's 6 points worth of stats. I think with two drops, you like, on average, it's 5 plus an ability, right?
Yeah. 1-4 is good. Yeah, 1-4 is good. Yeah. I can see why you did that.
I mean, you don't want to make it a 2-3, right? Because then it just dies. So
yeah, definitely not a 2-3. I did not want to make that a 2-3. Yeah.
A 0-5 I'd be okay with as well, but then it's just got no potential unless it's a combo card. Like, it literally has no purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't trade. So I really do like that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. Let's see. Next one, we have Ambusher. This is Noxious's card.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. It's a Murloc, baby.
Whenever I hear
it's a 3-2-3. Okay, so it's a 3-mana, 3-2 Murloc. It's called Coldlight Ambusher, epic card, stealth. Whenever your hero attacks, each player draws a card.
So wow. This card I made as a way to intersect with a ton of potential archetypes. So one of the archetypes is you're playing an aggro deck, you have weapons. You know, you're not like Wazoo, right? You are aggro warrior or hunter. And you have this card that comes in stealthed, so it lives, and then you attack on turn 4, or the turn it comes into play, and you draw a card. But the opponent does as well, so you give them more options to stop the damage. So if it's a control deck or a mid-range deck, they will have more tools to follow it up with. Because it's stealth, you can keep it stealthed and keep drawing. So that's like the first tool of it, which is a 3-drop that draws an aggro that has weapons. It's very specific. But then there's also the whole, I want to mill you, and I'm rogue. So right. I play this guy on top of Cold Oracle, and because I have a weapon in my class, I can also mail you while I'm drawing myself. And then there's the other tool, which is I just play a Murloc deck and I need card draw that isn't terrible. I'm Murloc Paladin or Murloc Shaman. Here I go. So I thought that was just like a cool card that intersected with just a ton of archetypes at once and didn't feel completely broken. I don't know. I'm wrong.
Yeah. Seems pretty balanced. Like, I like the, you know, if you're playing Mill Rogue, turn 2, weapon up, turn 3, start dropping this and just start hitting face. Does Blizzard like the idea of Mill? Because I know they have this whole thing about...
That's a good question.
Like, losing, like, they don't want people to lose control of their hand, essentially. And Mill is kind of like that, but not really. I know, like, people love Mill Rogue. Like, people love watching Mill Rogue. Like, the freaking top 3 Tavern Brawl, everyone's playing that Mill Druid because it's fun. It's, like, it's, you know, a very control-y way of, you know, interfering with your opponent's deck and hand.
Yeah. What's the most different way of playing Hearthstone than you can possibly have? I don't think there's any
like
other...
Combo Warrior was fun, right? Did you guys try it out? Like, when you Violet Illusionist, Fool's Bane... you get them to 0 cards, and then you play Violet Illusionist, Brand, Coldlight as Warrior. You take 0 damage from fatigue, and they die. Like, this can fit with Fool's Bane because you draw, they draw. And it's like, it's so many decks that are fun that I'm like, I like this type of card just because it has like this very straightforward purpose. But it can also be made into like a, I don't know, kind of a combo tool.
Yeah. Yeah,
I want to see more of that kind of like that kind of card, not this exact mechanic, but those kinds of cards I think would be nice for Hearthstone because they're pretty complex. Like, it looks like nothing, but it's easy to understand, but it does so much at once.
Yeah, I mean, this of course go great with Aggro Shaman and Doomhammer, right? Like, sure. You gotta replenish your hand, and that's like a very
very
traditional like way of using this card. Like, not doing mill is just like, hey, I'm gonna punch you. And I'm like, cards punching you. So I'm going to play Coldlight. Yeah, and you do lose something, right? It's 3 mana. So you
3 mana, so it's
lots of tempo. And it's stealth, so you can't really take advantage. And if it gets, you know, hit in a AoE because you're filling up the board, you're essentially throwing away a card.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely a lot of possibilities with them. You know, pros and cons.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, seeing a mill, I wonder if seeing a mill in a pro. A pro environment would really be great. It's nice seeing every once in a while, but if we saw it all the time, I think it would kind of
The only
suck.
Reason you hate it is because the only mill decks that exist are absolute fucking snorefests. Like, there are ways to make mill decks that aren't boring as fuck, but you need
like cards hybrids like, or like full-out mill decks?
I mean, like, the card you just saw could be used in a like hybridized version of that mill deck that doesn't revolve around... just drawing the game out, like, because Rogue is a mill deck, but it's not boring. Have you noticed? It's very high action. It's quick, unlike Warrior or Fatigue Mage, which are both like sit back, eyes block, pass. Right. Like, that's what you don't like to see. But Mill Rogue is great. I think it is.
Okay. All right. So next card that we have here is a 1 mana. It's called Unpicked or Unpickpocket. It's an epic card, and it introduces a new mechanic, which is bargain two, yes. Draw a card. So what's bargain two? Is it a discount or?
So bargain is a mechanic that I came up with because it's kind of like a reverse overload. But the way it works is you give your opponent coins for each bargain. So okay. You give your opponent two coins. So you pay one mana, you draw a card. That's what Unpickpocket does. And in return for paying one mana to draw a card, you give your opponent two coins, which again, does many things. Either you play it in mill row because you fill up their hand and hey, fuck you. You know, your coins are taking the slot that you want before I mill you. Or alternatively, it's just something you play because you want to draw with Auctioneer, trigger combos. Yeah. If they play coins and you have a way to abuse the fact that they play spells, or you have like a Lotheb type card in the metagame that can also be exploited. There's so many things you can do with a card like this or mechanic like this, at least in Rogue, that I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if it's broken or what. I think it's cool.
Yeah. Bargain is negative, though. Like, it's a very, very negative effect. Yeah. But I think one mana cycle is just so strong that you kind of have to make it that bad.
Seems like it really helps your opponent in most cases. Like, you have to have a really specific deck for this, then.
Yeah. I think it's actually very, very good. Like, and for what Rogue does, I think this is a very good card. Because, they use the double coin, you sap whatever they played, right? Like, it's all that's what Rogue does. It just negates tempo for cheap. And even if you give them tempo, you can usually still bypass what you gave them through backstab, preparation plays. So if any class can use this mechanic or, you know, Unpickpocket, it would probably be Rogue. Maybe the only ones, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, good stuff. We all picked Rogue type of decks this week.
Need some love.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely some love. I have a feeling that, I don't know, it's funny how the cycle goes, right? So everybody's been obviously wanting for Priest for a while now, but there's going to be another class. I think Priest will get some love this coming release. So it'll be interesting to see what replaces Priest as that class that everybody endears or feels needs an improvement. Okay, yeah. Guys, so why don't we do some viewer Q&A? And you guys haven't tweeted any yet, so either you guys can tweet them to @ChamMV, which will get a higher priority, or go ahead and just tweet some questions here, and we'll just be looking in the chat for whatever we see here. Hope everybody's doing well, though.
Yeah, didn't you have a card?
Toast, did you have a card? Did I miss your card?
I put a card up there, but
here they are. Yeah, shoot, I missed these. Okay,
it's also a rogue card. Don't worry.
Which one do you want me to do? Which one?
Man. So the reverse grip one, because this was actually a card I did April Fools, and It got a lot of attention on, social media, because I tried my best to make it look as legitimate as possible.
I went into trouble
putting it in Chinese and passing it off as a card that was released by, a Chinese website. Because usually with like April Fool's fake leaks, people just straight up make a card. It's like, whoa, check out this card. But if you add that layer of
convincing me, like you had a background made, like it was.
You actually had a background. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's like super well done.
Yeah. So people were discussing it, and Ben Brown had to step in and say, "Yeah, it's not real." But those are good points. Like Thais saw the style was real, and he said he loved the idea of it.
Yeah.
But for me. So there's a couple of problems. Is it's a one mana draw card, which in Rogue is insane. Yeah. And the idea was you have to have a weapon available for you to play this card. Another thing is like the use of it, like swapping your weapon's attack and durability. I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, oh, that's a cool effect. That's neat. It reminds me a lot of like Confuse and Create Alchemist. Yeah. Like, yes, there is some scenarios where it's cool, and it's like if you pull it off in the perfect way, it's like holy shit, amazing. But most of the times, it's just gonna be like, okay, that didn't really do much. In fact, it probably hurt me a little bit. or like, oh, okay, I just get.
I don't know, man. You deadly poison and reverse grip. You draw a card and you have a 2/3 weapon as rogue. I'm like, yeah, I'll take that. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Do you think one mana is under cost? Like a one mana draw.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, it is a cycle at the worst. Just picture this:
I hero power as rogue because it is a rogue card, right?
Yeah.
So I have a 1/2 weapon. I deadly. I have a 3/2. Then I swap. So I have a 2/3, and I'm rogue. Yeah. I'm not done doing my thing. I guess with Blade Flurry being like nerfed, it's less OP or less like dangerous. But it's basically turning your hero power into like a better Predictions Blade, which I love the what concept. If, but at one
poison blade, potential poison blade, guys.
Poison
oh
blade.
My god.
Poison blade, get a 3/1 weapon.
Yeah. Oh, you can god. Keep buffing it up then. You can keep buffing it up.
You get infinite durability and you just keep switching it. Like you just keep showing it from hand to the entire game.
You can't decide how to hold your weapon.
Oh my god.
I won the right hand
blade. Exactly. Yeah.
This blade is complicated.
Left handed or right handed.
That's good. Good shit. Good shit.
No, this is cool. I mean, I like the, yeah. I like that how it just makes you kind of think. Again, it makes you think of different cards in a different way.
I really like the concept of it though.
Yeah,
so it's, like, this one is really cool.
Yeah, it's a neat and cool effect, but chances are you're going to use it mostly for the cycle for your Ashnia or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which kind of sucks. Like, what if it says swap your weapon's attack and durability, then give it +1 attack. And it was just one mana, no card draw. Like,
that's
it's like a worse deadly poison in a way. But it's sometimes
but not real. I mean, gaining an attack and durability is,
it's like almost one mana, one damage. Really, if you think about it, because like you lose your weapon, but you turn is like let's say we have like the Wicked Knife, right? Like the basic rogue dagger, it would basically become a 3/1 weapon. So it's like you've deadly poison and lost one durability. Like, how bad is that? So you'd have to combo it with other stuff to make it better.
I think if Rogue had more weapons to play, then this would,
Yeah, I don't like giving Rogues weapons, though. Like, it makes their hero power so bad. It's like
anti-synergy, right?
Yeah. I really just hate when they give Rogues weapons because suddenly I have a hero power that I just never want to use all game unless my weapon is like Poison Blade. I mean, Poison Blade was obviously terrible, but at least it didn't punish you for including a weapon. So
yeah, the weapon hero power is very limiting in a lot of ways. Because in the same note, I wish rogues could have more weapon cards.
Which is why I like this card, because it's not a weapon, and it still makes me want to... Like, if you add a ton of cards like this, like Deadly Poison in this, suddenly you have like this very interesting rogue type deck, which Tinker Sharp Sword Oil, Blade Flurry, Deadly Poison, the South Seas Quitface or whatever his name is, like all these cards that are meant to interact with weapons are more appealing without them being weapons. So top tier design in my mind, like this is just sick.
Nice. All right, cool. Next one is the Kobold Miner. 3 mana, 4/3 body. It's a kobold, obviously. It's a rare card. Yeah. Battlecry Excavate, which is a new keyword. 3 kobolds. What does that mean?
So excavate is a mechanic. The name I came up with is just because I couldn't find a better name for it. I don't really know if like it makes sense, but what happens is when you excavate a card, you dig through your deck until you find that card.
Oh, okay.
But in the process, you mill everything on the way. So excavate, say to Ragnaros, which you there's no card that lets you do that. But the point is, I mean, you couldn't do it. It would be broken in combo decks. Like, you can't have excavate a legendary. You would just kill the game. But excavate, say, kobolds is like, I get 3 kobolds straight out of my deck, but I lose everything between those kobolds. So all the way down to the first one, then I mill everything. I fail reaver myself down to no cards at all, to where I die, essentially. So Kobold Miner is just kind of a fun spin on the idea of excavate. But the mechanic itself, I think, has some degree of like if you design it carefully, right? Like, that's the thing. That's a broken mechanic. Everybody knows it. So if you design that mechanic carefully, then I think Hearthstone can use it. Like, they've done it with Curator, they've done it with Sands Demons.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the fetching portion of Hearthstone. Excavate is just another way to make it happen, basically.
There had to be some powerful kobolds, though.
Well, I mean, getting spell damage might just be. I mean, what if double evolve kobold geomancer is what you're digging for? I mean, that's like +5 spell damage. And if there's ever a world in which that's something you can do, or there's like kobold synergy, And okay,
he imagines playing Kobold Miner on turn three, and it's like the bottom three cards. That's a video for Ghost.
Has to
right
be
there.
One last card, like, because the way this guy works is
it just has to be one card. That's true.
If one of your kobolds is the last,
that's brutal.
Like, compare this with say Curator. Let's say Curator was an excavate, like this effect.
It would mill you completely.
Oh my god.
Like, what changes would Curator gain, in your opinion, to like make up for it? Because essentially it's the same effect, but you're milling everything in between, you know, the beast, the dragon, and the murloc. Like, would it get like...
Curator's big drawback is it's a fetch card for turn 7, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the drawback it's got, if you ask me. If it were like a 4-mana taunt, like 4-mana 3/5 taunt that, or like 4-mana 2/5 taunt that did that, I'd be like, holy shit, this is busted. This card is way over the top. But at 7, that's kind of what makes up for it. If it were excavate, it would have to just be Sogoth in terms of not targetable or whatever, like of the minions you get, maybe.
I mean, it's basically what Ancient Allure was for Druid.
God.
Curator. I mean, in the decks that it's in, right? It's on average probably something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's actually good, even if it's a smaller body. Okay, well, that's kind of cool. Yeah, I think that would make for some fun times watching, having people dig for their kobolds. Be definitely good. All right, so let's take a question here. We do have one question, and it's from Michael, or Bowser, from Twitter. If you could introduce one wild card back to Standard, what would it be? I know mine.
Wow. Wild. So next Rammus and GVG.
Yeah, I'll let you guys go and see if you...
I mean... like, for me, it's probably Lotheb.
Yeah. That's the one else.
Yeah, of course.
I don't want Lotheb.
I mean, Lotheb, it just gave you an answer to certain spell decks. Like, get that crucial turn. Like, playing Lotheb on the right turn in Freeze Mage is, like, game-changing. You play it a turn too early, you know, maybe he Alex Rodgers, you play a turn too late, by then he already has his setup. Like I miss that. Lotheb.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
At the very right point. And right now, there's nothing that really punishes spell. I mean, Trogzor's not... No, Trogzor's in GVG.
I bring back Illuminator, personally. I think Illuminator is just right. It's like a super well-designed card.
Mm-hmm.
I would love Illuminator right now. I think that would allow for some more Hunter and some more... Possibly Mage. I don't know. Mage might have some things now with Valet and everything, right? Yeah, I would like to see Illuminator too. I think I'd like to see Valen's Chosen too, if I'm going to pick a...
Oh, yeah, that's...
Why not?
Unique one. And everybody's saying Light Bomb, but I don't actually think I would want to see Light Bomb. Sludge Belcher, definitely not, just because Nazoth would be too good if Belcher was in there.
I mean, if I want to bring back OP cards, then sure, I'll just bring back Lotheb, right? Like, I don't really think these cards are healthy for the game. Like, long-term, if you ask me, if Lotheb in the core set, right? Like, can you just imagine that for a second? Like, just how stupid the game would look for so long. It's like, mid-range decks, all right, slap this guy in. Aggro decks, still my top end. It's like, this guy just shuts down controls. But I like the concept of Lotheb. Like, if Lotheb were a 3-3, I'd be more comfortable with it.
Yeah, that's a good point, because in the past we've seen, like, obviously with Secret Paladin, you know, the turn 5 drop is a Lotheb.
God,
yeah. It's like I don't care if you're playing a spell deck or no spell deck. That Lotheb's going down on turn 5.
Yeah, exactly, it's basically a taunt. Like,
yeah, which isn't the right way to do it, right? You want to use that effect for maximum effectiveness. But yeah, I see your point. If there's a way they can print a mini Lotheb, like, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the effect though. So for that, I definitely want that effect back in some shape.
Yeah, I think that's the only card outside of, I guess, Taunt. Taunt's a decent answer too, but that was really the only card that would stop combo, any kind of combo deck, you know, just like at least playing around it. So at least it gave you that ability, where right now, you know, it's like if you're playing Breeze, you just die to the Anifin or die to at least at the time with the charge with the warrior combos, you had no chance at all.
Yeah, somebody in the chat is mentioning Hobgoblin and Mistress of Pain. Those two as well, I think, are just greatly designed cards, right? Like, there's a subset of cards that Blizzard makes that are just like hitting the perfect balance spot I think those are it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
They're in there.
Okay, let's see. We got another one from Twitter here. Okay, so Alex Pignetto asks, how would you guys plan to tackle the balance design on new cards? It seems hard to find defenders. People thought Warden was one.
Warden
is Menagerie? Still one. It's another one of those cards, guys, that we're just not talking about because Malygos Druid is strong.
Warden is essentially Tuskar Totemic a year ago.
Just wait.
It's Tuskar Totemic next year, guys. Yeah. Whenever you see it, it's next year.
Oh man, you know what I'm scared of is that they don't revisit the cards they've got for the next two sets and they still have like they have the thing from below for Druid, or they've already made like this obscene totem golem type card for Beast Druid. Like if they've made that card or those cards and they add them to the game while Menagerie is like already included, it's gonna be Tuskar all over again, and I really truly deeply hope it doesn't get there.
I mean, like the three decks that are on track, in my opinion, for that to happen is Beast Druid, Resurrect Priest, and Thief Rogue to a smaller extent. That they're pushing this kind of synergy, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But they're giving the pieces like slowly and slowly. Eventually, it's going to reach my expansion where they just give like
crazy one. On it. Yeah. Like they've done with everything, right?
So Shaman experienced that with Thing from Below and Flame with Faceless on the same expansion. It's like, right, so it just went from a below subpar deck to like just insanely strong. But they were building it since TGT, essentially.
I mean, we just got Raven, like Enchanted Raven and Menagerie Warden, right? As Druids. Right. So like they flopped on Wildwalker, they flopped on Druid of the Fang, they flopped on Knight of the Wild.
Yeah.
So all we're missing right now is like, okay, so they realized those cards were bad. They figured out two really good cards to include, Enchanted Raven and Warden.
Mm-hmm.
And now, if anything, like if history is an indication, next set is going to contain two really sick Druid cards, and the next one after that is going to completely ruin Hearthstone. So,
what's funny is Druid of the Fang some of the other cards that they were beast-centric, those cards would have been fine if there were just more beasts. Like, if they had as many beasts as there are now, it would have been fine.
They had enough. Just like Wildwalker would have had to be a 4/5 baseline, and it would have needed to be a 3-drop. Beat wasn't bad.
I mean, I thought Druid the Fang was it could have been good if it just there just wasn't enough viable beasts to play.
If Druid of the Fang was around now and Big Game Hunter is gone,
it'd be broken.
It'd be crazy right now because
it'd be Flame Wreath basically.
Yeah, exactly. Four mana.
I don't think it would be crazy. Like that's a bit pushing it because. I don't know. It's like, it's an okay minion, but like, if I can play Tiger or Druid of the Fang, like, I'll just play Tiger. You know, it's like, what? I don't know. I have a hard time.
it's hard to say because it is very beast dependent. There's Stealth Beast in the form of Druid of the Saber. And there's also Mark of Yashirash to increase survivability. But you're right. Like, even now,
that's true.
Even now, I still have trouble sometimes keeping a beast alive playing Beast Druid.
That's the biggest problem, right? Like, we have Mounted Raptor, which summons nothing. Mm-hmm. If Kindly Grandmother was, like, a 4-drop for Druids that left over, like, a dumpster-tier beast, then suddenly, yeah, I mean...
Well, people don't play Raptor. People play Druid of the Flame, right? So
it's better, isn't
it? It's a mix.
I mean, Muzzy was number one in Legend for a lot of last season with the Druid. But personally, I'm kind of with you guys. Like, I haven't struggled against that deck at all because I play control decks generally, and it doesn't have an issue with that deck at all. Like, not even close. I almost never lose to Beast Druid.
When they get card draw, like, what worries me is if they ever get card draw in the form of, you know how shamans have had, like, they had Manitide and Ancestral Knowledge for a while to compensate for the lack of draw?
Yeah.
Nowadays, they really don't need it much because they just generate value through Tuskar and everything.
Well, the hero power generates value.
But they play a Druid Drake, for instance, right? Like, they have value tools that they can use, whereas Druid doesn't get that. And if we ever get, like, a compensation gift from Blizzard to Druid to make up for that lack of card draw, on top of Mark of Yasharge, I think that's what's going to push the deck into... I don't know. Just like it's going to become obscene, really.
But so I guess getting back to this question, how would you tackle the balance design? For me, it's like I would. I mean, I would continue different lines of archetypes. You know, they've been trying, whether it's tribal, you know, with like beasts and you know, we've seen with Murlocs or whatnot. But also, I think that the, you know, the whole battle cry, I think the battle cry archetype or whatnot, they were trying with things like crowd favor and things like that. It's pretty simple, but I think they kind of just stopped on that. So yeah. I'd like to see them kind of continue on some of the things that they gave up. I'd like to see them still explore Inspire to a degree, because Inspire, you know, that Inspire mechanic is one of, if you think about the hero power gaining more value, that's one of the reasons why Shaman's so good right now. It's because they brought so much more value in other cards from the Shaman hero powering, like you know, things from below.
It's interesting you say that, because like I absolutely love Frost Giant. I love Fence and Coach. I love Maiden of the Lake. I love Kuldara Dragon. Right. I loathe and hate Nexus Champion Sarad, Coda Rider. Like if they become good and they're like just top tier, those cards are just bad for the game, right?
No, it's dangerous. Don't get me wrong, but I still think the general concept. I think the concept of Inspire was a good one, and it's hard to do it, but I feel like one of the limiting factors in Hearthstone is still the hero power. Like we just talked about the rogue hero power being so limiting, right? And just
Poison Blade was a great, like the design of Poison Blade is actually fantastic. It's like if you had to have me like choose a few cards that are just super well designed, like Poison Blade would be up there. The only issue is the cost they gave it. You talk about Inspire being good. What's good is when they make cards that make your hero power give you more value, but Inspire is not the right way to go about it. Like very often it's just, well, you either keep getting, you know, 3/5s or random Murlocs and you win, or it does nothing in the case of most Inspire cards, which is why most of them suck. Blizzard knew that, so they just made them all terrible. Like they knew that.
I don't think they knew that, because that was...
No, they knew, dude. Everything
that
is...
That would be crazy if they just, like, threw away an expansion.
They did.
Like
they did. They like, there's no way they don't. Fence and Coach is a 3-mana 2/2. They thought about it. They thought, is it fine for us to give you a good turn 3 tempo play if you're going to streak into turn 4 Murloc Knight? How is Recruiter an epic? Like, you know, they know it's garbage. That mechanic is just over the top.
I think maybe they expected the meta to slow down to a crawl. Because a lot of the Jealous cards, like, wow, if you win the Jealous card, you're going to win, you know, like the Gadgets and Jouster. You win that, you got 1-mana 2/3, and the Fisher from the Paladin. You win that, you're healing yourself for so much. And the Jousting Champion, I don't know the name of any of these Joust cards because I've never seen them. The one that gained
Joust
the...
doesn't know the names of them, then they're in bad shape, man.
The one that gained the Divine Shield.
Master Jouster.
Master Jouster. Like all these defensive Joust cards, like if it procs, it's like amazing, and it would have definitely slowed down the meta, because the idea is that if you're playing a slow deck, you have higher cost minions, and if they're playing aggressive deck, they lower cost, so you're going to win more often than not. But if you lose that Joust, it's like you're going to lose the game. King's Alec is probably like the only decent Joust card in my mind. It's a 2-mana 3/2, so
it's most of the class ones that actually end up working. Like Healing Wave is not bad either. You know, I think the general ones, it's tough to make non-class cards, because if you make a non-class card really good, then it's just everywhere, right? And that's when the game really starts to homogenize and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think they were just expecting the meta to be at a point where hero powering was okay, right? But it wasn't.
That's obviously not, like, I don't know. I have a hard time imagining a world where they thought that was the case, like with Naxx and GVG.
They made Lock and Load that expansion, right, in TGT. Yeah, Lock and Load?
Yep, they made Lock and Load.
Like, that's a very control card, right?
I mean, I'm not saying they didn't make good control cards. It's just I don't think they expected those cards to be good. Like, I actually don't, like, I can't picture a world in which the devs sit down, play their Inspire cards against meta decks and say, this is a great mechanic and it's going to work. What they realize is if we give this to, like, if Murloc Knight is a good card and Paladin plays it, we're fucked. Let's make Inspire shit. Like, if Paladin would it was back then, got to, like, I mean, come on, just think about that, right? Murloc Knight, if it were good, like, how toxic would that card be? It'd be so obscene. Oh my god.
I mean, it's been close a few times to being played.
It's been the best, but it, like, imagine if it were good. If Inspire was just good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that card would be Mysterious Challenger level oppressive in the world where Inspire's.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy. I don't disagree with that, but it'd be nice to see. But yeah, overall, I don't want them to power creep anymore. So try to get creative with what you can do with the current, like, you know, power levels, because if it gets any more powerful, then I think we could be cornered, actually, in terms of what we're doing with the, given the 30 cards, given the 30 health. I mean, it's, there's only so much more we can do before it just gets crazy, you know? And keeping things simpler, keeping things like moderate is what it kind of makes for more plays, you know? And,
but they have to add synergy, like a lot more of it, right? You alluded to it in the form of tribal and everything, but like, if your deck building consists of the strongest curve stuff, then it's boring. But if your deck building consists of, like, for all the shit that we give Yogg-Druid, I think it's a fantastic design for the deck. I think it could use a bit of a general toning down. Like, Arcane Giant just, I mean, that just pushed it. But point is, that type of deck is fantastic because it's got, like, all these elements to it that aren't the same, but they all use the same tools. And we just don't have enough of those.
I know, but if you try to one-up that, I mean, what are we looking at?
You don't want to one-up it, but like Mill Rogue could be a thing. Freeze Mage without Mad Scientist could be a thing. Like, I don't even hate Freeze Mage. I don't even hate Priest. As long as it's not this, I play 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I resurrect you down. Like, that's just garbage. That's not what I want. I want you to go ahead and discover minions, put them in the graveyard, and then resurrect from those minions
earlier
in the game. Like, so there's a lot of decision making throughout the stages. Whereas if it's just, oh, I got my injured, you know, on curve, now it's dead, now I win. Like, if that's the meta that we're gonna get, there's no decision making there. It's boring.
Yeah, I agree. All right, one more question. We've kind of been going long here today. Vilik MC asked, do you think Hearthstone would benefit from larger deck sizes, like maybe 40 or 45 cards? Would it help with the deck stagnation? I mean, maybe, but that will never happen. I can almost guarantee you that will never happen.
I mean, that's getting into like pretty like advanced deck building, like, because it's like Magic the Gathering. Like,
the answer is aggro is just OP because control decks, like, imagine your control warrior deck with two extra Prince Malchazars in it. Okay, now you have this zoo deck that instead of playing Direwolf Alpha smashes down Lance Carrier. You're still fucked. Like, it, aggro just has way more ability to have redundancy than control, and you just lose.
That, well, I mean, you can also think of it from the standpoint of some decks do almost have 40 cards now. So we're already, you know, we're getting there. And then if this whole steel rogue is going to become a thing, then rogue is going to have 40 cards. So we might have two classes that almost have 40 cards.
Yeah. That's a good cry from Magic the Gathering. If we go 40 cards, control decks need to be able to look at the top cards of their library. Or you need to have like cheap curator effects for specific decks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, otherwise you just end up with this, well, okay, I got my god draw, or I got an average draw, yours is crap because you're control, I win.
You couldn't go 40, 45 cards without altering the health, so it would be a completely different game at that point.
Yeah. Because it's just not enough removal cards right now, but there's a lot of minions card, right? It's not going to be a big difference if you play, say, Imgang Boss versus Dark Child Councilman, but now you have to fill up your control deck with more removal, but you're playing all the good removals now. So now, you know, do you fit in Dark Bargain?
I know, exactly.
To destroy minions? Exactly. Do you fit in, you know, Demon Fry to do 2 damage? Do you fit in Life Drain just because, you know, you lose your ability to draw your removal when, you know, deck size increases? So you can make up for it by adding more removals, but in Hearthstone, there's just not that removal card. I mean, it's just starting to put in less optimal removal. But with that less optimal removal, it's not going to be as effective if your opponent drops an aggro minion. Because to him, it's not a huge difference. But to you, your removal, the difference between, you know, Shadow Bolt and a Drain Life is insane.
It's really huge
damage, right? So I think if you are going to increase the deck size, you definitely have to increase health size. But I think 30 is working out pretty well for Hearthstone right now.
Yeah, I think it's still within the realms of being okay. But okay, well, everybody, thanks for your questions for Q&A, and I really appreciate you guys writing in. Some good questions today. But why don't we wrap up and do some shout-outs. Toast, thanks for coming on here, man. Any shout-outs you want to do, and where can people find you?
You can find me on a little Hearthstone channel on YouTube called Disguised Toast, where I make very serious and informational content.
Yeah, very, very
serious.
Informational.
Serious. Very
no,
serious.
No memes, no joking, just pure statistics. Serious. And follow me on Twitter at Disguised Toast, of course.
All right, cool. Noxious?
Yeah, just my Noxious GLHF. Just post random Hearthstone videos, either gameplay or talk stone, a lot of that these days, I feel, as I play the game less. I talk a lot about just game design stuff in general because I like it.
Yeah.
And otherwise, when I stream, Noxious_HS, and shout out to Complexity for being awesome and for JJ for still sticking with the game, even though he seems burnt out as fuck. He'll get there.
That's funny. I just want to thank you guys for, obviously, the two of you guys for doing the show with me. Everybody for coming and watching. We're back on my channel now, so definitely tune in. Remember to tune in here whenever you do come and watch Value Town. I do want to give a shout out to some of the folks on iTunes that have left some 5-star reviews. That's Obotherva, Rummage1727, both are HS, Dr. Zing CCCC. Thanks so much for doing that. And if you guys do listen to the show on iTunes and do enjoy it, you can leave a nice review also, which helps the show greatly and helps other folks find the show when they're looking for Hearthstone podcasts. Also, we have a Patreon too that helps support the show, helps to keep it going. And there's a few patrons I'd like to give a shout out to, just Devin Westfall, Andrew Parent, Lucas Capdeville, Atomic Junkie, Cameron McMillan, and Josh Silvestri. Thanks for supporting the show for as long as you have. And that's going to be it for now, guys. You can find the VODs for this a little bit later on youtube.com/ChamianV, and you can find the audios on iTunes and on Android. And I guess we're until next week, guys. Hopefully I'll survive this hurricane that's about to hit Florida in the next day. But if all goes well and I still have power, we'll definitely be back with Value Town a week from now. So until then, guys, we'll see you next time.
Later.
Peace.